From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. While many Americans scanned websites and superstore aisles for Black Friday deals, and others recovered from Thanksgiving food comas, the Trump administration released a major new report on climate change. The 1,600-page National Climate Assessment comes from the U.S. Global Change Research Program. That's a consortium of 13 federal agencies, including the Department of Defense, the EPA, and NASA. And the news is not good for a number of industries, including Georgia agriculture. Kim Cobb is a climate scientist and director of the Global Change Program at Georgia Tech, and she's joining us in the studio with some key takeaways. Hello, Kim.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for being here. Michael Wall also is here with us. He's a seventh-generation farmer and director of farmer services at Georgia Organics. Hello, Michael.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Kim, I'm going to start with you because you've studied climate change and climate science, rather, for 20 years. This report delves into the human and economic consequences of climate change. How does it anticipate the global climate change over the next several decades?
Yeah, so our emissions trajectories are on course to warm the planet by up to 8 degrees Fahrenheit by the end of the century. But of course, it's much more than just the average temperature associated with global warming that is a concern. As the report indicates, it really comes with a host of very negative and disruptive impacts to social and ecological systems that will really hit home. In fact, some of them is already, of course, hitting home here in Georgia and beyond.
So extreme weather, hot weather, cold weather, more rare?
Yeah, so obviously we're facing prospects for increase in heat waves, which is, of course, a more direct consequence of that warming, as well as some indicators for more widespread drought, as well as extreme precipitation. Those are the kind of key impacts that may hit the agricultural sector specifically. But, of course, other concerns here are coastal sea level rise, projections for multiple feet of sea level rise, an extreme scenario up to 8 feet by the end of the century. And so obviously indicating that there are many indicators already showing us that climate change is occurring today, a number of negative impacts landing on our doorstep, and of course projected to increase going forward over the next decades.
And of course, behind all of those projections are also human costs. And the executive summary of this lengthy report opens with a focus on communities and within that on vulnerable populations. Who does the report say will be most acutely impacted by climate change?
Yeah, well, this is one of the highlights, I think, from this report and the main takeaways from this report, and distinguishes it from many other climate reports in taking it down to that community level and really emphasizing the fact that the frontline communities are going to be those that are economically underserved and disadvantaged already, including minority populations across this country. And they will bear by far the largest cost of these climate impacts. And something to keep in mind as we weigh decisions around investments and protecting communities today to increase their resilience, not just today, but going forward, as an important solution set for climate change.
How and why those populations in particular affected?
Well, it really is about access to resources and adaptability. And so we've seen already from the recent spate of natural disasters related to Hurricane Harvey, Hurricane Florence, that those folks whose homes are destroyed can't rebuild in a day. They can't rely on savings that they have accumulated. So it's really just about access to resources. And you really need that to be as resilient as you can. And so those communities will bear the brunt.
Have these government reports in the past placed so much emphasis on the human cost of climate change?
Well, I think historically we focus more on the physical climate impacts. But I think what highlights really in particular about this report is that it provides communities with a blueprint for action to protect themselves today and going forward. And so you see just written throughout this report, here are some concrete ways that are regionally informed, this precise impacts that science tells us will be coming down to these communities and really allows them to take a hard look at their decisions and in some concrete ways that they can protect themselves today and going forward.
I want to get to those, certainly, but the report also very quickly, beyond communities, gets to the economic implications of climate change. How is climate change projected to affect the country's GDP?
Yes. So with the anticipated spate of impacts that are outlined in the report, it's important to note that no American will be spared from these economic damages in one way or another. And of course, some of the heaviest hit sectors are going to be the coastal real estate sector, agriculture across the nation as well. And so obviously health impacts, too, according to the report. All of this may amount to as much as 10% of GDP by 2100. You're talking hundreds of billions of dollars in damages year in and year out in some specific sectors. So this price tag, we're already feeling it. I think all Americans understand we're already feeling the true costs of climate change today. But this report indicates that those costs are going to escalate quite dramatically going forward and really pose some tough challenges for communities.
Along the coast, public infrastructure, $1 trillion in national wealth held in real estate threatened by rising sea levels, flooding, storm surges. Michael, let's get to you and dig into those Georgia numbers a little bit. Your job with Georgia Organics takes you to dozens of farms throughout the year. Seventh generation farmer yourself. The report notes that agricultural production and other agricultural-related sectors contribute billions of dollars and millions of jobs to the U.S. economy, but also projects the end of this century, over 500 million labor hours could be lost from extreme heat-related impacts in the South. What would that do to Georgia's industry of agriculture?
It's a little hard to relate to what $500 million worth of lost labor would mean. It's a kind of a communication gap that farmers would have a hard time dealing with. But it sounds like it means it's going to get harder and harder to farm. And that could have devastating impacts on the state's number one industry, which is what agriculture is. I would argue it's the state's most important industry. We all have to eat. And dealing with extreme heat like that, I think farmers are inherently a resilient bunch. They have a very close relationship with Mother Nature. They're going to take it a day at a time, a season at a time, and a year at a time. So it's really hard to estimate what kind of impact it's going to have on agriculture, unless we just say it's going to be really bad, which is what it sounds like.
So we hear these big numbers, as you said. It's hard for people to understand, but they do understand heat, rain, lack of rain. It's not just increased heat and increased drought associated with it that scientists project will expect to hurt farmers, rather. It's rain, of all things, in the form of extreme precipitation events. And we saw one such event with Hurricane Michael in October, last year with Irma. What do precipitation extremes do to farmland?
Flood them. Extreme lack of precipitation. There's no crops. Crops die. And these are things that are part of a farmer's reality right now. So they deal with this idea, this concept, on a yearly basis. If they're not dealing with too much water, they're dealing with too little water already. So this is something that's part of farming. I think a farmer would say that. This sounds bad, but until I see it, I don't know what to do about it. They're just going to take it day at a time. That's the farmer's way.
And farmers are also used to these kind of cycles, however. For you, your family's been farming for many generations. Many farmers in Georgia have been farming for many generations. Have they seen this before?
The conversation was going on for a long time, and especially when climate change first came out, and then when it first got political, it was a lot more obvious that farmers were skeptics. And I haven't heard that skepticism in a while. Mm. And I think it really started in 2013 when you had those deep freezes. Then they were almost exactly 6 months apart. That had never happened from Atlanta upward before. And then the summer before that, you had record levels of hot soil, which that affects every single crop. So the researchers, UGA scientists, and the farmers were all going, this is weird. I don't know if it's climate change, but it's something. And now that I haven't heard any farmers say anything that was skeptical of climate change in a long time.
So a new government report on climate change predicts transformations in life as we know it in Georgia, impacting human health and the economy and agriculture and infrastructure. So we're talking about that with a climate scientist and a farmer, some of the people who are looking at and feeling what it would be like to experience that. Kim, you mentioned events already happening on the ground, wildfires, extreme weather. Are these conclusive? Exclusively linked, however, to climate change. I've noticed scientists have reeled back from saying this is the cause.
Well, I think that the science is pretty clear that there are already a fingerprint of climate change in these natural disasters. I mean, these wildfires are record-breaking in California. We've had record-breaking hurricane seasons in the very recent years. And the science is getting stronger and stronger in helping us to understand that we're already seeing these impacts and that these are the kinds of impacts that have always been predicted by the models for climate change. And so when the report emphasizes that we need to move towards climate readiness, this is exactly what they mean. We're already so vulnerable to these types of natural disasters. When you load the dice with climate change, you can expect worse statistics going forward, worse disasters going forward. And so we have an opportunity to use this information to protect American lives and protect American property right now in the process, make ourselves healthier and wealthier.
Well, it also has something for everyone, you know, people in cities, farmers, rural communities, and Georgians on the coast. So what are some of the report's key messages about coastal environments?
Yeah, so coastal environments, of course, particularly vulnerable with ongoing sea level rise associated with ocean warming and, of course, the melting of ice sheets, as well as, of course, these storm surges that have become all too recent over the last several years, really illustrating the critical vulnerabilities when you layer up these challenges, which are only going to continue to get worse in terms of threats to coastal communities. And so coastal communities make up, of course, the vast majority of the U.S. population and of course, close to half of the GDP in the U.S. So this is a huge amount of wealth and prosperity and human lives that are on the line right here.
You've been working with communities throughout Georgia with the Georgia Tech Smart Sea Level Sensors Project. Now, what is that?
Yeah, so I'm very excited about that. I think it's one of the kinds of solutions that the report outlines. It pairs scientists and engineers from Georgia Tech with governmental officials and community partners down on the ground in Savannah, Georgia. These are communities that know that they face acute near-term and long-term risks associated with sea level rise, especially during emergencies like hurricane landfalls. And so the idea is to instrument the coast with internet-able sea level sensors to provide real-time information about what the water level is and what kinds of critical infrastructures are vulnerable in real time to help emergency responders. And it's been wonderful to just see the momentum that is built behind this project, both here at Georgia Tech and also down on the coast. A community is just very happy to know that we're down there working to build resilience and add capacity to their coastal flooding risks.
And some of the specifics here, there is ocean acidification, which is an effect of climate change, already killing off shellfish and corals, red tides, algae blooms, depleting oxygen in the water and can kill sea life. I'm just reading some of the highlights from this report. So how have the local communities responded to this project?
So when we're down there installing sea level sensors, and this is with my partner, Russ Clark, who's also faculty here at Georgia Tech, and he and the folks from the Chatham Emergency Management Agency have been installing these sensors down in communities, and people come up and ask them, well, why are you doing installing that thing on the bridge? Looks a little suspect. When we tell people what we're doing, the number one thing that we hear is, thank you. Thank you for working with us. Thank you for protecting our communities. And it doesn't matter what political stripe you are, you're happy to see Georgia Tech researchers down there in your community working to protect you.
Well, stay with us, Kim and Michael. We're going to be looking at more of the effects and more of that political stripe that you just mentioned for this new climate report. This is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. Stay with us. I'm Virginia Prescott, and this is On Second Thought. The fourth in a series of government reports mandated by Congress was released on Friday. The National Climate Assessment lays out some dire predictions of what climate change will do to the U.S., and more specifically to the Southeast. I'm speaking about that report with Georgia Tech climate scientist Kim Cobb. We've also been speaking with Michael Wall. He's director of farmer services for Georgia Organics. Now, Kim, it was the day before Thanksgiving and 2 days before this report's release that President Donald Trump tweeted, brutal and extended cold blast could shatter all records. Whatever happened to global warming? But when he visited Georgia after Hurricane Michael, he had this conversation with a reporter in the press pool.
Last night in your comments about climate change, you said that there is something there, and previously in the past you've called it a hoax. What changed?
No, there's something there. There's no question. There is something there, man-made or not. I mean, there's something there, and it's going to go, and it's going to go back and forth, but there is something there. But again, 50 years ago it was brutal. 1890s were brutal. You have different times.
Now, you, Kim, you study the climate and natural and human-made mechanisms of global climate change. Any way to tell how much of this is naturally shifting weather patterns and how much is from human emissions?
Yes, so there's report after report after report, of course, supported by all the major national academies across the world, that humans are responsible for almost 100% of the warming over the last several decades. And this is clearly laid out in the recent National Climate Assessment, as well as supported by vast troves of thousands of papers from the literature, including my own work studying the climate extremes and trends of the pre-industrial period compared to today.
Michael, you, as you said, you've spoken with a lot of farmers on the ground, people who don't necessarily... they're climate skeptics, or let's say that they're skeptical about the role of human beings in climate change, but they're seeing what they're seeing on the ground.
Yeah.
What is the argument for them? Do you think it makes more sense to see what's actually happening or economic projections? What translates best for the farmers that you work with?
I think what translates best is what they see, what's happening to their bottom line, what's happening to their farm production. Right now would not be a good time to talk to farmers in Southwest Georgia about this report. Mm. I know many of them...
Because they're cleaning up still from Hurricane Michael?
They're devastated from Michael. They don't know when they're going to get a check again. They're probably still getting trees off their houses or their crops. Or if they're tractors, that's still a reality in Southwest Georgia. So it's tempting to use this as an opportunity to talk about climate change, but I certainly wouldn't do that right now.
Yeah, well, one way that people have chosen to address climate change is by eating different foods, right? Absolutely. Can you tell us about how what we eat and where we get our food is tied up in that?
Sure. Kim mentioned climate readiness, and I think that's something organic farmers are dealing with now. They're mulching, they're rotating their crops, they're using low-till methods, and they're using cover crops. So all of those things would be good for like an extreme drought situation. And those are things that organic farmers are already doing. And to the consumer's end, I think, you know, we're a society where almost all of us are wearing something on our wrists that tell us how many steps we've taken. And, you know, we're doing things that are really healthy for ourselves. But I think we can start thinking about taking a couple of other steps that can also benefit the entire community, and that includes organic farmers in Georgia. So making healthy food choices that tie back directly to a farmer that you know who's using organic practices, you're fighting climate change with every bite when you're doing that, and usually it's going to be a much tastier, more enjoyable experience.
For you, Kim, you were talking about resilience. You were talking about readiness. It's pretty clear that we're not going to get people, you know, people are not going to stop taking trains. Planes. They're not going to stop driving in cars. So where do we go with this in terms of readiness and fighting climate change or keeping the tide back?
So there are a couple things. I think we really have to remember that climate solutions is not just about drawing down our emissions. Climate solutions is about preparing our communities for climate challenges today and, of course, becoming more resilient to those coming in the future. And so that's too quickly brushed over. Michael notes that it's never a really great time to talk about climate change, but this report gives us an opportunity to really translate some of these impacts into community discussions around readiness and what they can do to protect themselves going forward. And so I really don't want to leave that off the table, especially important here in Georgia, where climate change can be the third rail. It doesn't have to be. These are actionable, real tangible, concrete actions that communities can take today.
Well, it's a conversation that's been going on for 20, 25 years, longer in some circles, but certainly in the mainstream, this idea of like, is it too late? Can we turn back? And always the message is, no, we can do something. What do you think? Is there a tipping point?
I mean, you know, as I'm fond of saying, it's not a pass-fail here. What we're going for is really trying to reduce the risk that we're baking in going forward. So, but in doing so, we have to recognize we already have some clear and present risks that we have to face on a community level. And so there's a lot of actions that communities can take both to adapt to the impacts today and reduce the emissions trajectories that they're responsible for going forward. And so in the absence of federal action in this space, we have seen a groundswell of activity at these different levels. So community levels, state levels, regional actions, people coming together to try to tackle these very steep challenges with the growth of emissions. And that is extremely heartening as a climate scientist to see that folks are out there aggressively moving towards a different way of life. We know it needs to happen.
Kim Cobb, she's climate scientist at Georgia Tech and director of Tech's Global Change Project. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Michael Wall is with us also. Thank you so much. He's a seventh generation farmer and director of Farmer Services for Georgia Organics.
Thanks.